Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So I'd like to begin today by addressing that some are criticizing certain sources that I use. And I want to remind everyone that just because I show a certain source, that does not mean that I trust that organization. It does not mean that you should trust that organization, or any organization for that matter. It simply means that is where I first saw the story. It is the story itself that's important. As always, I ask you all to follow up with everything we show with your own independent research and come to your own conclusions. Because in today's highly manipulatable world, sadly, everything is suspect. So you need to trust yourself. So I'd like to begin today by addressing a story coming out of WakingTimes.com entitled "Chemotherapy Promotes Inflammation, Causes Cancer to Spread, Yet Another Study Shows." The article says, despite years of research suggesting that chemo and radiation can cause cancer to metastasize, usually within 6 months after treatment, this information has been suppressed. That's an important aspect to understand there, because a lot of these studies that show how chemotherapy can be successful typically stay within a 4 month period following the treatment. And this is showing how 6 months later, how almost always we see recurrence in these kind of things. There's other interesting topics to discuss here about how we understand that chemotherapeutic drugs, in this case, are some of the only, or pretty much the only drugs that these doctors see a direct cut of the profit from. And that is a profit motive. Now, I would argue that a lot of these treatments we see today in very sinister ways are actually designed to continue to promote the pharmaceutical industry. Now, a lot of people don't want to address that, but it is something that's very prevalent today. And we see it in all aspects of pharmaceutical drugs, where in most cases, you're taking more drugs simply to combat the side effects of the first drugs that you're taking. Now, in general today, chemotherapy and its general treatment has about a 3% success rate, a little bit less actually. And that is absolutely absurd, especially now that we have things like cannabis and many other natural remedies that have been proven to work well and work better, especially than 2%, 3% success rate. So this article goes on to address another factor, that the underlying cause of cancer, which is inflammation, has been referenced in these studies. And I mean, that's where a lot of this connects back to, that the idea of inflammation in general, which is directly caused by chemotherapy, is what's causing these cancers to spread. And as well, inflammation is something I recommend anybody look into out there. The broader idea of inflammation on the body is connected to just about every illness we experience today. And we're seeing how most of the treatments we have, the invasive treatments, the modern Western medicine, is causing these inflammations. And that's why we've been trying to focus more on holistic aspects. Really what that means is creating a way for the body to heal itself, the natural way. And it ties into another interesting story about how we're seeing a lot of holistic doctors showing up dead. I mean, that's a whole nother topic to get into, but it's something I recommend you look into. There's a lot of money. This is a multi-billion dollar industry we're seeing here. And their competition is directly tied in with this holistic aspect. And the idea of what modern Western medicine today is that curing people is not profitable. Treating people indefinitely from cradle to grave is the best way for these companies to profit. And I know that's a sinister topic, but that is something that we can verifiably show today from these companies being exposed to bribing companies to do things they shouldn't. I mean, there's any number of aspects we could discuss, but the bottom line is what we're seeing here is that chemotherapy specifically is actually causing the cancer to spread. And not only is this happening, but they're aware that it's happening. And yet this continues to be promoted. We need to continue to focus on holistic aspects and natural remedies and ways to heal the body other than invasive Western medicine. And there's also another topic we should discuss on kind of the deceitful rise of Western medicine and how we grew into this pharmaceutical-based Western medicine practice. And it does stem from a lot of very sinister aspects and specific families that drove us to that. Now, I'll include some show notes for you to dig further if you'd like to research that. But this is an important study to remember and to continue to talk about. The idea that chemotherapy in and of itself is a negative thing. So the next story I'd like to discuss is actually an older report, but it ties in with things we're talking about today and yesterday. And this is a report coming out of Mint Press News that proves that Israel was directly tied to Syrian rebels and secretly supporting them. And so when we talk about Syrian rebels, we're talking about militant groups such as ISIS, al-Nusra, these groups that are now essentially being manipulated to seem like they're not. This is ISIS, was what we're talking about. These Syrian rebels. And we're showing that Israel is directly connected to them and supporting them secretly. And now that's more widely known. So considering yesterday's oddly correlating events, you need to ask yourself, is it possible that the open attack on Syria from Israel and the drone attack carried out by Syrian rebels are connected to Israel? I would say that's very likely, but that's something for you to consider as we move on with these next stories. And the next one to discuss comes out of Moon of Alabama, entitled Syria, Army Gains in Idlib's Insurgents to Challenge Foreign Occupiers. The article reads, while the U.S. seems to have given up on regime change in Syria, it is still trying to sabotage the progress of the Syrian government and its allies. And it goes on to discuss the idea of the recent drone attack. Now, as I said before, it's important that we don't jump to conclusions, because there is actually no tangible proof to show that the U.S. is directly connected to that attack. However, I agree with their assessment in this, that essentially that the rebels, what they've had been doing in the past was not the same kind of attack we recently saw. These drones were very modernized GPS drones, and that's not what the rebels in the past had been conducting. Nonetheless, there's no tangible proof as of yet, but I absolutely agree that, in my opinion, this is directly connected to Western powers. So the overarching point here is simply how what we're now seeing is Syrian troops essentially pushing out its foreign occupiers, which is specifically the Western powers. Now, this story is important for a number of reasons, generally just geopolitically important to understand what's happening in Syria and how what we're seeing is these occupying forces under the guise of being there for some kind of a humanitarian reason, which are truly there for hegemony and for resources, and how we're seeing, but the fact that we're now seeing them pushed out. I think that's a positive thing. But the reason we bring it up is it directly relates to a story today coming out of theactivistpost.com entitled Pro-Terror Groups Create Fake Atrocities News Stories for Anti-Assad Twitter Campaign. The article reads, as the Syrian military makes massive gains across the Idlib government, which we were just discussing, the last major bit of territory controlled by Western-backed terrorists, mainstream media is once again alight with Assad is bombing his own people's stories. It is the exact same playlist, only this time it is updated for Idlib. The story goes on to discuss essentially how what we have here is accounts being made on Twitter that are preloading fake atrocities. And they have plenty of screenshots to show you exactly what we're talking about here. They're pre-made news stories, are basically ready to be released to continue. And it's all carried out under the hashtag outrage for Idlib. And really, this is just continues to show you the fake propaganda that's being created around this narrative. And it's important to understand that we've shown in the past that this is the narrative is always that Assad is this evil villain that's bombing his own people. And, you know, it does not necessarily mean that Assad is an amazing person. But this whole story is built on falsities. And we've shown you that the moment that these Western powers were pushed out, hundreds of thousands of locals rushed back into their homeland. And that shows you that if they were really fearing for their lives from the leader, why would they be rushing back? And it really just this continues to show you that they are doing everything they can to carry out the operation that is being thwarted at every turn. And really, this is a larger agenda than just resources. But in my opinion, that is one of the largest immediate factors at play here. And really just control over the area as it pertains to the larger geopolitical goals. So as the article says, we should be prepared to see many more of these propagandized stories continue to be pumped out. And you need to, like we always say, question everything and do not fall for these lies. And that's what they are. These are outright lies. And we can see it by their aggregation of fake stories that I already have ready to be released at a moment's notice. So the next story I'd like to discuss is an interesting one as well, because we've continued to see ups and downs, and that's talking about the cryptocurrency market. Again, last night, we saw dramatic drops in just about every cryptocurrency across the board. And many were, again, rushing in to say, here we go, this is the bubble popping. But in reality, what it was is, again, we talked about this in recent shows, but the idea of South Korea and their new wave of cryptocurrency regulation. They're now appealing to 23 nations and global financial bodies to work cooperatively to regulate cryptocurrency for the sake of, quote, financial stability. They also tried to work with the EU and the IMF to collaborate on curbing crypto trading in general. Now, this is a big deal. that, in my opinion, what we're seeing here is the government again attempting to either manipulate, control, or stop altogether what I'm calling the decentralization revolution. And that's not a new term. The point is that that's what I'm trying to make people understand is what it's all about. Decentralization and cutting out the middleman of the government scares the crap out of these people. And they're going to continue to do everything they can to minimize this effort. And so now what we're seeing is the regulation coming out of South Korea specifically. But clearly they're reaching out to nations all across the world to basically try to, what they're claiming, first of all, what we talked about recently, is that the cryptocurrency connects to all kinds of illegal acts, drug trafficking and human trafficking. But now what they're claiming is that cryptocurrency directly somehow threatens financial stability across the world, which is absolutely absurd because in reality, it does the exact opposite. But what it does threaten is their hold on the financial system. And that's what scares them. The stability of their government-controlled currencies are what they're concerned about. So right now, this is, in my opinion, this is an open attack on cryptocurrency. But the positive thing is that it did rebound to some degree. It is down overall right now. But certain ones, such as Chainlink, immediately rebounded, showing us that many of these are very important, that regardless of what the government does, the people behind them are very aware this is not going away. Now, interestingly, today, a story came out of ZeroHedge.com and entitled "Confusion in Korea. Ministry of Finance Refuses to Support Cryptocurrency Trading Ban." So this story in general is going to continue to develop. And we can clearly see that even within the government, these stories are not completely agreed upon. And we're going to see ups and downs across the market. But I plead with everybody not to panic and to maintain this decentralization revolution. But as always, make sure that you support the right ones, because the cryptocurrencies such as Ripple are the opposite of what we're talking about. In my opinion, Ripple is the systems, the establishment's effort to control this movement and connect it with the current financial system, which is the exact opposite of what we should be trying to accomplish. The next story is one that's taking place as we speak, and it comes out of the freethoughtproject.com, the article entitled, "As Media Obsesses on Oprah 2020, FISA Pushed to Let FBI Spy on You Without a Warrant." The article reads, "While Americans were distracted by the possibility of Oprah's 2020 presidential campaign following her speech at the Golden Globes," which was horrifying, by the way, "the United States government has ramped up its campaign to let the FBI legally spy on Americans without a warrant. Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act has served as the foundation for the NSA's largest and most egregious surveillance programs for the last decade. It was set to expire on the 31st, but because it was last authorized by the court on April 26, 2017, for a 12-month period, lawmakers are hopeful that they can find a way to reauthorize Section 702 before it actually expires on April 26, 2018. The first attempt to reauthorize Section 702 was through the introduction of the USA Liberty Act, which we've discussed in the past. As the Free Thought Project has reported, Congress claimed that the bill would, quote, better protect Americans' privacy by requiring the government to have a, quote, legitimate national security purpose before searching an individual's database. Now, first of all, that is an absolute blatant lie about what it's actually about. And always these things like the Patriot Act or the Liberty Act, the name is completely contradictory to what it's actually trying to do. The article reads, however, what the bill did not advertise was the fact that it did not actually address the legitimate problems that exist with Section 702. The FBI's legitimate national security purpose could be justified by just about any reason the agency chooses to give, and agents could only need supervisory authority in order to search Americans' metadata. While many privacy experts were hopeful that if the USA Liberty Act did not pass, Section 702 would expire on December 31st, making it illegal for the governments to collect data from innocent Americans without warrants, intelligence officers warned that would not be the case. And now, first of all, regardless, we would see this happen. We've known that they've been doing this well before, so this is something that is really just for the face value. Now, as a spokesman for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Brian Hale told the New York Times that, quote, the government believes it can keep the program going for months, even if it's not reauthorized. Now, that is exactly what's happening right now. Instead of continuing to push for the passage of the USA Liberty Act, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has introduced the FISA Amendments Reauthorization Act of 2017, with the intent to renew Section 702 for 6 years. This is just something that is absolutely, at its definition, unconstitutional. We are seeing continued legislation that chips away at the Constitution and continues to allow these people to use falsified justifications to basically do whatever they want. And really, that has been the summation of all legislation over the past 20 years, as far as I'm concerned. Really, it's everything has been aimed at continually dissolving the constitutional rights that we already have. And Section 702 is absolutely no different. The FISA Act is absolutely no different. This is just another way for the government to spy on Americans, not anybody else. And that's what this is primarily revolving around. Now, in Trump's defense, he did claim, quote, it helps the Obama administration surveil and abuse the Trump campaign, or rather it helped the Obama administration surveil and abuse the Trump campaign. He tweeted out saying, House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier to so badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others. Now, I think this in a lot of ways is just kind of a distraction, or rather just kind of like plausible deniability. I honestly do not think that he opposes this in any way because it really empowers his own administration. But it's interesting that this comes out right before the act passes. Now, it's also important to note that Rand Paul has openly said he's prepared to filibuster the FISA surveillance and reauthorization. And the last and final story of the day coming out of ZeroHedge.com is Project Veritas exposes Twitter shadow banning, blocking opposing views. Now, this is one I'd just like to briefly go over. The article itself is very one-sided, in my opinion, and it's very clearly aligning itself with one side of the two-party paradigm. But the reality here is that this exposes the fact that Twitter, and really about the broader idea of censorship on the internet in general, talking about YouTube, Google in general, are openly banning and censoring people based on their opinions. It's no longer even about content that's not appropriate or any number of those false narratives and reasons they've given. This is about banning and censoring content they do not agree with for political reasons. And to me, that's a very big story. Now, Project Veritas has been accused of a lot of different things. It is generally ambush journalism, and they do kind of tend to lean one way on this whole argument. But the reality is they've done really good work in exposing the lies and the misrepresentations of our politics, of our organizations, of our media. And I think that's an important job to do. And this one specifically shows that they're openly talking about on video blocking and censoring people that are supporters of Donald Trump. And that, I mean, regardless of how you feel about that, or how you feel about Donald Trump, the point is that this just simply means they're able to do this to whoever they want. And it is important to note that Twitter and YouTube, these are independent companies. So they're allowed to do what they want, technically. But I always argue that how large they are today, specifically Google in general. I mean, you cannot do anything today without Google, as far as I'm concerned. And that makes it their job to maintain the rights, the average individual constitutional rights of every American. But we're not seeing that. Clearly, they are taking sides in this two-party battle, which is why we continue to argue for people to go out and find alternative routes to avoid YouTube, to avoid Facebook, to avoid Twitter, to find things like BitChute and DTube and Steemit, and begin to understand that this all ties in with the decentralization revolution. And honestly, right now, I am continuing to put more focus on Steemit and DTube and things that do not connect with the larger agenda. So it's important that we continue this revolution and strive to completely do away with these groups that are controlling, literally controlling our perspectives today. So for more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sites in the show notes below. And as always, question everything and come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.